communicating disaster risk reduction science and more. Active citizens build resilient cities.
Due to the supply of solar energy, water is permanently circulating in and between the Earth's ocean, atmosphere, and land through the processes of evaporation, condensation, precipitation, runoff, and surface and groundwater storage. However, when high precipitation rates or intense rainfall events exceed the river's flow capacity, flooding happens. Floods, one of the most threatening natural hazards, have become more common and severe due to human influence and development, causing devastation, economic losses, and significant displacements worldwide each year. But how much do we really know about flooding? Am I aware of the factors that increase the likelihood of flooding in my city? My name is Heather McLeod.
And I'm Francisco Febronio Peña.
And in today's show, we will talk about this particular phenomena, the challenges in communicating disaster risk, and the importance of effectively communicating ideas to society. So, Francisco, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Heather. Radiofonica, ladies and gentlemen, the river never sells, always rents, and can always take the land at any time without notice. Let me repeat this very important statement. The river never sells, always rents, and can always take the land at any time without notice.
I got an idea!
This is a strong statement from Professor Tomaso Mora Marco during the World Water Day celebrations in Perugia for the Water Manifesto this year. And if you think about it, the statement is completely true. Let's break it down to make myself clear. The river never sells. So picture in your mind a valley. A valley is a low area of land between hills or mountains, typically with a river flowing through it and the water is flowing inside the channel. Now think that the valley is experiencing a drought crisis, which means that it hasn't rained for several months. This condition has an impact on the river system because the flow of streams and rivers declines until the river dries up of water. But eventually, you know that it's going to rain at some point and the river will recover to its natural conditions and flow again. That's why the river never sells. It is his property.
What do you mean with the quote, "the river always runs"?
Before answering your question, let's define the term flood. According to the Flood Site Consortium, a flood is defined as a temporary covering of land by water outside its normal confines. A simpler definition of flooding is water where it's not wanted, where it's usually dry. Saying this, let's go back to the valley. So the river is flowing at an average stage and suddenly it starts to rain. Rainwater is absorbed into the ground or forms watercourses that feed into the river. When the ground is saturated, water runs off the land and into the watercourses, increasing the river's flow and level. For a certain amount of time, the river can manage the flow into the channel. But if it lasts several hours or days, the flow starts to go out of the channel into the floodplain.
What is the definition of floodplain?
Basically, the floodplain is an area of land adjacent to a river that experiences flooding during periods of high flow discharge. So the flooded valley is a clear example of fluvial flooding.
And what about the flooding that happens in cities or on the coast?
That's a great question. There are three types of flooding. So we have fluvial, which I have just talked about. Then we have coastal surge, flooding caused by seawater that is driven over the high water mark as a result of storms or hurricanes, as we witnessed this past August and September in the USA and the Caribbean with a record-breaking hurricane season. It is also known as a storm surge. And finally, we have pluvial. This is when water accumulates on a surface due to heavy rainfall and causes flooding that might have nothing to do with a river channel. One of the causes of pluvial flooding is urban development, having significant effects on surface water runoff. The most common example are urban areas with paved streets, parking lots, sidewalks, and buildings. It's all covered by concrete. All these affect the soil's water absorption capacity, increasing runoff and, obviously, the water levels.
Wow, this is shocking. I've never even considered that human activities could increase the possibility of flooding in the cities.
That's correct, and I'm not done yet. The destruction of natural wetlands and deforestation also plays a role in flooding because trees and dense vegetation cover slows down the surface water flow. Then we have the drainage system. Sometimes the volume of water runoff from a storm is greater than the system capacity. Lack of maintenance, improper system design, and construction are also relevant factors of flooding.
Does garbage on the streets make flooding worse?
As a society, we need to act in protecting our environment and ourselves. It is obvious that keeping the streets free of waste, flood risk will be significantly reduced because water will flow freely through the drainage system.
I'm fascinated by this stimulating talk. We'll be back very soon with Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction, Science, and More. Can you please mention flood risk prevention strategies?
Absolutely. Let's talk about facts. Keep in mind that flooding can be prevented entirely, but we can manage flood risk and reduce its impacts by using structural or non-structural measures. Structural measures are any physical construction that reduce or avoid possible impacts, such as dams, flood levees, or ocean wave barriers. On the other hand, non-structural measures involve policies and laws, public awareness, training, and education. For example, building codes, urban planning strategies, research and assessments, information resources, and public awareness programs.
So, is communicating disaster risk a part of non-structural measures?
Exactly. First of all, communication is very complex, and then scientifically, it's difficult to communicate because you have to be politically correct with what you say. There are guidelines that have been established for years by international organizations. I mean, you cannot go against them. So, in my opinion, the key in communication is how we can be politically correct and say something that is not politically correct because people are tired of bureaucratic argot that doesn't reflect what is actually happening. At the moment, there are politics that are driving the debate in the climate and environmental agenda, and politics are not always for the benefit of citizens. It is like, you know, like politicians and scientists live in a completely different world, and this needs to change. And now, because we're not going anywhere, we are just creating more confusion and dissatisfaction in today's society.
So what's the way to really communicate to people?
As a scientist, I believe we have to find a way to communicate bottom-up instead of top-bottom, which is what it usually happens, to speak the same language of the people and write articles or stories that they can relate to. This is the first step to raise awareness. We have to keep the science solid and arrive to the heart of the people. For example, let me tell you two potential titles for a newspaper article, and tell me which one has more social impact. So the first one is "People see fridges flooding in the street." And the second is "It's time to change our 100-year flood map into a 200-year flood map." So Heather, in your opinion, which title is more convincing?
I like the first one. It's catchy.
Exactly. "People see fridges flooding in the street" has an instant impact in the way people react, because fridge means food, and without food, you basically die of starvation. So we need to consider that at the moment, communication is more important than science. So if you are able to communicate and convince people of something, it's more important than the content of your research. This is very sad for the scientific community, but this is the reality. The way you deliver the message is more important. We have several examples in our world. Great public speakers are also great leaders who inspire action to millions of people. The field of disaster risk reduction requires the commitment of politicians, entrepreneurs, business people, public figures, and everyone to spread the word of prevention, preparedness, response, and recovery to natural disasters. I believe this is the only way we truly make a paradigm shift in our world society.
I could not agree with you more. But don't you think it is going to take a while for this change?
The truth is that every year we're becoming more conscious and aware about the effects and impacts of natural and man-made disasters. Social platforms and media content have revolutionized the way we obtain unlimited available resources of information by just a click, helping us to be informed all the time. The vast majority of people own a cell phone of some kind, and the smartphone ownership is skyrocketing around the world. So I think we can use this technology to help people understand the level of exposure to natural hazards and provide some sort of automatic early warning alerts, as some countries have already implemented, to save lives and to reduce economic losses.
So to sum it up, today we learned about the definition of flooding, the types of flooding, and the factors that trigger flooding in the streets and in the environment. In terms of communicating disaster risk, we're still far from reaching an effective solution, but several initiatives and organizations worldwide are working in the right direction to share the message with citizens.
Thank you for staying tuned to Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More, and I look forward to be with you once again next week. Please follow our university website, waterdoc.unistrapg.it, and our social networks in Facebook, Twitter, or my personal Facebook profile as Francisco Peña. And remember, active citizens
build resilient cities.
Goodbye.
Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More. Active citizens build resilient cities.